teenage girls in Blasingstoke, England, protesting a ban on wearing trousers to classes at Blasingstoke Technical College. Attended lectures Monday, wearing nothing below the waist except very tiny panties. College officials made no comment. I'll bet a lot of their classmates did, though. Chicks arise everywhere. Here's another one from Coventry, England. They sent to Coventry two mini-skirted office girls who complained that their splintery old desk ripped their pantyhose, forced a shutdown of the Massey Ferguson tractor factory. That's a big factory, friend. The girls were joined by 11 sympathetic male workers in a walkout that forced plant officials to send home 500 workers because the strikers work in a vital section. "It's terrible," said one of the girls. "We can sometimes get through three or four pairs of pantyhose a week before catching our legs on the desks." A Massey Ferguson spokesman said the walkout cost the company over $1 million in lost production. Pantyhose. You know, speaking of great moments here. I love to read newspapers. I'm a real newspaper cuckoo, because I think if you really read newspapers the way they should be read, you realize ultimately the truth of our time. And don't read the news. I mean, you read the news. I mean, if you have to, but that's just the glop, the covering on the peanut. You know, that the real stuff. For example, speaking of little trivial things, a couple of weeks ago, I made mention of the fact that I believe, and I still do, you know, I believed this for a long time, that you can judge the country, that is the self-esteem of a country, or its confidence quotient in the world, by the size of its stamps. That the bigger the stamps, the more nervous the country. That it's an inverse ratio, see? And the more glorious full color the stamps get, the more trivial the country is. And I said this a couple of days ago. No, I'm serious. I'm very, very serious about this. You know, and I'm waiting for some PhD in sociology to do a doctoral thesis. Some guy, you know, to really work on this, because I seriously believe this is an actual truth. And I remember as a kid, you know, I used to get these bags of stamps where they sent on approval. And you get a big bag of stamps, see? And in the stamps, there would always be gigantic triangular stamps. And it would say, Mauritius, 3 Drobnik, airmail. And, you know, Mauritius, and the stamp covers about, you know, half the size of a tennis court, and it has gold fringe on it and all that stuff. And so some little dinky country has always got giant silver stamps. For example, one of the most spectacular stamps of all time is Tonga. Now, you don't hear Tonga often threatening France. Tonga makes statement at UN, a nation shiver. Continents tremble, you know. No. Tonga is about, roughly the size of Staten Island, and has about half the population of Staten Island, see. But Tonga has had stamps made out of gold foil. Have you ever seen those stamps? They're fantastic, yeah. They look like the tops of Schlitz beer bottles, you know. They're just wild-looking stamps. And that's Tonga. So I've been collecting stamps to prove that America is in problems, real deep problems that itself will not say. For example, look at this pair of bippies that just came out today. I got a couple of gigantic stamps. Yeah, and it took both of these stamps to send this letter. See, the stamps now cover half of the envelope, and one of them simply is a beautiful color picture. You see, it's tremendous. It's a 6-cent stamp, and it's big enough. The stamp itself is big enough that if you folded it up, you could make a paper airplane out of it. It's a real big stamp. See. And it says, "The Age of Reptiles." We are celebrating things that have nothing to do with America completely now. The Age of Reptiles. And I think, gee, you know, you could put some fantastic reptiles on that if you really wanted to go all out. I know some reptiles that would look good on that stamp. But it's the Age of Reptiles. And, of course, the next one is African Elephant Herd. And I have one that says, "The American Bald Eagle." Picture of a bird. Very big stamps, these are, see? And I'm thinking, if we ever really decided to make our national bird what it really should be, the starling, I could see a stamp, you know, with a starling amid a bunch of crud, you know. You just have a picture of a starling walking down around the, you know, the gutters and knee-deep in cigar butts, telling a dirty joke. And, you know, typical starling picture. And it says, the national bird, the starling, American starling, age of reptiles. So, you know, things are happening everywhere. For example, even the New York Times, you begin to see the New York Times, there's a little chink in the greatness of the Times. The other day I'm reading the Times, you know, they have a very official sports section. Oh, there's no sports section like the New York Times sports section, you know. It's really, really official. They have guys like Leonard Colpett and Robert Lipsyte. You know, he's a listener, you know. I used to get letters from Lipsyte when he was working on the obit department or something. Now he's official, you know, and you don't hear from him. But nevertheless, Lipsyte, no matter what he writes, he's very official. See, if he's writing about the Tiddlywinks tournament in Provo, Utah, he brings sociological significance in it, see? And, very, very important. And they never have headlines like the Daily News. You see, it says, Seaver KOs Cards. You don't see that in the Times, you know. Never. It says, Tom Seaver hurls one hitter, they say very discreetly. And then it says, pitcher throws excellent game. That's the little sub-headline. And then they even show you that they really are removed from this. They don't even know the players. It will say, Orlando Cepeda, a first baseman, which is a very clever way of putting down the whole idea of sports. See, a first baseman. They never say, Cepeda, you don't have to tell a ball fan he's a first baseman. You don't even say a first baseman. Frank, Babe Ruth, an athlete. That's the ultimate put-down. They never refer... You notice... Oh, yeah, this is an interesting kind of put-down. If you go to the theater page now, they would never say, Laurence Olivier, an actor. Oh, no. I mean, that would offend the theater fans. What do you mean, an actor? You mean we don't know who Olivier is? You know, John Gielgud, performer. You know, they wouldn't buy that, see? But on the sport page, the Times is a little bit above sports, but it realized it has to do it, see? So it has, you know, it has guys that write these things, you know, where, you know, it says, Tom Seaver, a Met pitcher. Well, I mean, yeah, he's, what do you mean? He's the pitching staff, you know, he's a Met pitcher. And so this is, you know, typical little phraseology. The phraseology of the put-down is very important, and a guy who is being put down recognizes it. See, yeah. So here's Orlando Cepeda sitting in a barber chair, you know, and he hits three home runs, drives in 17 runs for the Cards on this day, see, and he picks up the paper and says, Orlando Cepeda, a first baseman, you know, Hank Aaron, an outfielder. Well, now, at the Times, though, there's little chinks beginning to appear. For example, if you look carefully in the Times, you can see that things are beginning to change. I'm reading the sport page, see, and they throw sports all over in the Times. You have to sometimes wade through all kinds of things. Like here I'm reading in page 66. This is where the sports appear in the Times, see. And it's under an article called Canadian Turbo Trains to Resume as Overhaul Ends. Now, that's a zinger of a piece. You know, you read that for a while. And then you finally work your way down. It says, precipitation data. Well, let's see, precipitation data. You know, it says total since January, 13.85 inches. That's an exciting piece. And then there's one that says bankruptcy, bakery shop, declaring bankruptcy sale in Jamaica. Okay, that's one of those official things. You know, charge me with anything that my wife has bought at Bloomingdale's in the last 7 years. I have nothing to do with that crummy bag, and don't you come around and ask me for dough. You know those little articles that say a declaration of non-intent and stuff like that? Well, way down at the bottom it says, Crying at Ryan's. I says, Crying at Ryan's. This could mean a whole new era in sports. For those of you who are sport fans, a whole new era is beginning. A little tiny piece down at the bottom. Have you noticed how last year you hardly ever read about pro basketball? And now that the Knicks have won the championship now, you know, big whole things, Wilt the Stilt is now a big deal, and Willis Reed has lunch with Mayor Lindsay. Well, you know, a couple of years ago, the pro basketball was down there with the roller derby, you know, and it really was, you know. The only guys who went to pro basketball games were these little short, fat guys with cigars, you know, who stood up in the balcony. I went to one of the games once, and they used to stand in those days, see, they're all up in the balcony with the blue smoke coming out in the garden, see, and these basketball players are playing down there, and instantly a guy holds up a $10 bill. He says, he'll say like this, Barnett, Barnett, Barnett gets the next two, Barnett, Barnett, 10, 10, I'll give you 10, Barnett gets the next. It was nothing but a whole big betting game, see. Well, now, you know, it's Gay Talese there with Jackie Kennedy, the whole bit. So a whole new era has begun, see, and the real basketball fans can no longer buy tickets. They can't get in. Forget it. Just like the real football fans, I used to go out when the Jets, believe me, were playing at the Polo Grounds, when there'd be me, 19 other guys, and 7,000 pigeons who couldn't make it south, you know, because of their arthritis. And so, arthritis, excuse me. And we're sitting there, hello, test. Speaking of arthritics, this is WOR New York. Would you hit the money button, please?
Boom.
What's this? Exciting.
The sound of Chevron Island. Shall I fill it up with Chevron?
Oh, just a minute. I'll have to see how much money I have in my purse. You see, I was shopping, and there was a sale, and I guess
Don't you have a Chevron National credit card?
Oh, I wish I had.
Well, do you have MasterCard, American Express, or Bank America?
Oh, yes. Do you take them? Oh,
certainly. Over 24,000 Chevron dealers coast to coast now accept MasterCard, American Express, and Bank America.
By the way,
if you'd like a Chevron National credit card, here's an application.
Hey, that's great. Fill it up, please. Oh, why do you have all those tropical plants and native masks?
Well, we'd like you to think of Chevron Island as a warm and friendly tropical island. That's one of the reasons why we accept American Express and MasterCard and Bank America.
I see. You want to make it attractive so more cars will stop here.
And we get an occasional boat, too.
Year one. For those of you who wonder what this mysterious sound of year one is, all I can say is there's no way to describe it. If you haven't seen this year one poster, I can only say, quickly, get out your checkbook, send $2 to Year One, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York, 10001. It's a wild poster. It's about, what size is it? I'd say it's about a little under 3 feet wide, roughly, wouldn't you say? Something like that, 33, 34 inches wide. And I would say it's about 24 inches, roughly, 2 feet high. And it's in spectacular lithograph. It is beautifully reproduced, great colors. And it's in many colors. It's not one of these little blow-ups of Paul Newman, anything like that. And it is a wild, surrealistic, it's supposed to be 2 minutes on. It's a wild, surrealistic painting. And if you would like to see one, by the way, you're not risking anything. They'll send your dough back if you aren't satisfied. It's $2, check or money order. Get it in now, man. Year one. 460 West 34th Street, New York. But if I may get back to the important things of the world here, friends. Little tiny changes are signified by clues rather than by actual events. And I say that there's a beginning of a new thing. Have you noticed that as the basketball season grew, more and more towards the Knicks, they began to pay more attention to the Long Island Nets, the New York Nets? Well, they're Long Island, you know. Did you notice that? Day by day, they were getting more attention. And I predict that in 2 years, the New York Nets will be like the Jets. And that all the Knicks fans will be defending the fact that they're Knicks fans. And they'll have to apologize for it. It's like Yankee fans that they always apologize. Invariably. You hear the guys, well, I can't help it. You walk in, you'll say to a guy, hey, do you like baseball? He says, yeah, but the Well, you know, I got to admit, don't get me wrong, I'm a Yankee fan. And, of course, everybody in the audience goes, boo, 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 yeah, boo, boo, yeah, ooh, wow. Because you have to apologize. Just, I know some guys that are secret New York Giant fans. They have to, you know, they put on false beards and mustaches and go out and watch the Giants because anybody who's anybody is a Jets, you know. And because, you know, we have this whole thing, anything that's new is always more exciting. It's new. See, it's more exciting. Fantastic. Even if it's, you know, it's a total bunch of dildocks. It doesn't make any difference. It's new. But now, wait a minute. It has to be new and a winner. That's the big difference, see. Oh, yeah. You can't be just new because I remember when the poor Jets were out there playing at the polo grounds, you know, they were called the Titans. And, boy, they were anything but. They would be out there scrabbling down in the dirt, Bake Turner and all those guys. Yeah, he was playing with them, you know. And nobody cared, you know. Absolutely nobody. You couldn't even get a piece in the paper about him. I'd go out and see this fantastic football game. 27 fights would break out down there in the line alone, you know. And one guy, I remember one the sad evening, was cold. Oh, man, was it cold. The temperature was like, you know, 10 below zero. And I'm out there in the polo grounds. And the Titans were behind, as they often were. The Titans were behind in the last minute and a half of the game, see. And so they were playing Boston. I remember Boston, yeah. The guy for Boston, a kicker, he goes back. See, they got the poor old Titans down. See, they're dead. They're not going to do anything, see. The guy fades back behind his goal line, the Boston kicker. He kicks one. I never saw a punt. Boom! You know, and any football player will tell you that in cold weather, punts go like 20 times further than they do in warmer weather. One, the ground is hard, see, and the ball bounces, get rolling on and on and on. It's like an enormous pool table, see. So he kicked this ball, what a shot, right down the sideline, and it hit at about, maybe the 55-yard line, something like that, see. Went right over the 50-yard line, hit about the 60-yard line. It was about a 60-yard punt, see, and it was a hard line drive, and it hit end over end. That ball rolled right down the sideline, see, and this little guy, the Jet safety man, some little guy, he was a little guy, looked like a fire plug with feet, you know. He runs back, and he picks the ball up with one hand behind his own end zone. Remember this. He's running like mad, chasing the ball, see. There's no hope, you know, no hope at all. These guys are dead, you know. They got about 12 seconds now to play. He runs back behind his own goal line, running away from the play. You see, he's running towards the end zone. He runs into his own end zone, chasing the ball, which is going popping all over the place. He reaches down, grabs it with one hand, turns around, runs back between the goalposts, comes tearing out over the goal line, and runs 107 yards for the most fantastic touchdown I ever saw. He was unbelievable. Guys are falling over. He's reversing himself. He runs back and up, back and he's up to the 35. He's back to the 20. Now he's reversing himself. He's back to the 15. He spins. Now he's up to the 20, the 25. He's up to the 30, the 35, the 40. He spins. And now he's reversed himself. He's back to the 20 again. He's up to the 25. He's back to the 12. He's back to the 12. He's spinning back. He's up to the 15, the 20, the 25. He's in the open now. Holy smokes. He's at the 50, the 45, the 30. The entire team is chasing him now, you know. He's down to the 12. He's down to the 10, the 5. He's over. The Jets, the Titans tied a score with 3.5 seconds left to play. What a game. Who do you think made the extra point? Bake Turner. They won the game just as the referee is raising his pistol. Well, the people, all 15 of us, were delirious. I mean, they're hitting each other on the back and yelling. You know, it was in those days, the entire fans, all the fans knew each other. It was like, yeah, serious. They'd say, hello, Louie. You know, hi, Charlie. It's Charlie. What happened to Al? He's not here this week, you know. And so the whole fan are yelling and hollering, see, and the football players are now running off the field, see, covered with dirt and crud, and, you know, it was such a sad football team that they didn't even have, they didn't have the money, this is an actual fact, to get their uniforms cleaned. They were that down. They were that dirt, you know, completely down in the dirt. They had no money at all. So here this team has not had its football suits cleaned since the second game of the season. So these dirty, cruddy guys with torn jerseys are running off the field. See, yeah, they had borrowed helmets. You could see old helmets, the Red Grange type, you know, with the big holes on the side and all that. They're running on. Oh, it was a sad crowd. And the crowd, you know, the crowd, all 12 of us here hollering at the team. See, they're yelling. And so the team is waving up at the crowd. You never see that. You know, the team's, oh, Louie's here this week. You know, they run into the dressing room. Well, the next day, I expect to see something in the paper about the sensational run. Nothing. I mean, it was really sad. You know, a whole bunch of stuff about Y.A. Tittle. You know, Y.A. Tittle has got a cold this week. 17 pages of pictures of Y.A. Tittle curing his cold. You know, 29 pictures of Y.A. Tittle buying a Kleenex at the A&P. Will they beat Cleveland this week? A whole bunch. Way down at the bottom, it says, Fightins, defeat Boston. They couldn't even spell it. Yeah, Fightins. I remember just Fightins defeat Boston. And then they had the score wrong. It was like 21-3. Actually, it was 23-22 was the game. So, those poor guys, you know. Well, of course, we don't have to know. We don't have to know what happened. And, you know, the rest is history. See, one day, the whole thing changed. And it changed gradually. It didn't change overnight. All of a sudden, now the Giants are way down at the bottom of page 322 under the truss ads. You know, it says Giants sign quarterback. Who cares? It's a whole jet world now. And I predict that in a couple of years you're going to hear about the Nets. But now here's a whole new development. For those of you who follow developments, this is the Times, friends. It's next to an article that says Japanese trade surplus shows decline. Now, that's a zinger of a piece, right? Well, right next to it, it says, you ready? Crying at Ryan's. Last night, at Ryan's Tavern, Ralph and Bob knocked off the two-star pool players. The losers were Al and Louie, who represented Ryan's. They were bombed 5-0. How do you like that piece? That's a whole new trend. That could be a whole new trend. Like it says, Big Charlie Gutstop last night on the Route 3 Diner beat Al DeGallio in Indian wrestling. 4-5. You know, in other words, people sports could suddenly become very important. Like it says, in the concrete basketball court in the park at 3rd Avenue and 6th Street, at 3rd Street and 6th Avenue, Big Fred, Little Charlie, and two guys from the Figaro defeated. and I thought, holy smokes, last night at Ryan's Tavern. Now, the guys, their last name is not even in it. Last night at Ryan's Tavern, Ralph and Bob knocked off the two-star pool players. The losers were Al and Louie, who represented Ryan's. Where is Ryan's? Where is Ryan's pool hall? Who is Ralph? Who is Bob? Who are these two non-perils? Who defeated the standing stars, Al and Louie. And they bombed them 5-0. Well, you know, everywhere you look, you see little signs that things are happening. I mean, for example, here's another sign. How many of you are fans of want ads? I love want ads. Listen to this one, man. Authentic dead copperhead. Preserved in formaldehyde, for sale. A dead copperhead in formaldehyde. Well, now, wait a minute. Now, that's just the kind of you know, sticky stuff that some people would love to have on their mantelpiece, you know? A dead copperhead. Friends, have you ever seen a live copperhead? How many of you have ever actually seen a copperhead in action? You have? Well, not many people. Have you, Herb? Where did you see one? You don't see those in Passaic. I'm sorry, you know. Well, everybody has them, so there's no point in telling you stories about copperheads, but I'll tell you this, you want to hear a story about a copperhead? Oh, I'll tell you a story. I read that thing and I turned green. I want to tell you, I mean, the one thing I'm not going to buy is a copperhead. When I was a kid, see, in fact, we had two types of snakes. That were really always constantly the scourge of all the kids. You know, the kids have always got a rumor among them that, you know, you get bitten by a snake, you're dead. yeah, there's this little, oh, sure, well, of course it's true. Yeah, of course. I mean, no question about it, certain snakes. And, of course, there's a lot of rumors of that type. I mean, there's the, you know, there's the famous golf ball myth. We're not going to that. Yeah, there's the thousands. Oh, yes, the indelible pencil. Anybody knows that if you lick an indelible pencil, you know, on the lead end of it, with the purple stuff, you have maybe, oh, 3 or 4 days to live. It's totally poisonous. And I've seen many guys that tried to commit suicide in fourth grade by licking an indelible pencil. I remember Jack Morton had a purple tongue all the way through his sophomore year in high school. From but, you know, these things are part of our life. You just can't put them down. And we had a swamp. See, I'm a great believer. This is the beginning of the swamp season, you know. Oh, yeah, as you get into June and July, this is the period of the year when swamps get, you know, they really get ripe. And we had a swamp. And we lived in this, of course, when I was a kid, I lived in the northern part of Indiana. And, you know, it's funny how many letters I get from people who doubt that. People write you and say, oh, come on, did you really live in Indiana? I guess the belief is that nobody actually lives in Indiana. And if they do, they don't leave. They stay there, you know. And there it is, you know, it's one of those things, no matter where you live in, people, and there's a constant myth that the shepherd lives in Jersey. This is a constant myth. I don't know where that developed, but shepherd does not, never has, nor never will live in Jersey, so stop it. I mean, get off my back. But this is a constant myth. Oh, speaking of great myths, here, I got a letter here from a person that says, please call my sister. I wrote you some time ago about marrying her. You have not yet called her. A serious letter. I mean, when people think of getting letters from cuckoos, they always think of hate letters and so on. There's all kinds of cuckoos out there. Oh, yes, very many cuckoos. And one of the persistent cuckoos I noticed is a persistent belief that certain types of people have. I don't know what it is. The people who are in show business somehow are always indigent. I'm going to have to tell you something very, very disillusioning to many of you. Shepherd gets paid for what he does. He gets paid handsomely. In fact, he gets paid exceedingly well. That's right. And I continually get letters from people who say, Dear Gene, I know the truth now. You might as well admit it. I saw you working in the men's tie department of Bloomingdale's last week. Now, I didn't want to say anything about it. I was with my sister, Agnes, and I know you work there, and that's what you actually do for a living. And why don't you ever mention it? There's nothing wrong with selling men's ties at Bloomingdale. It's an honorable profession. My uncle used to sell ties at Alexander's, and he was a great guy. So please tell everybody on the radio about how you do this, because I'm sure a lot of people would like to help you out and come and buy a tie from you. Yeah. And P.S. My sister said we would like to have you over for dinner some night. I'm sure you would like to have a good home-cooked meal, as you probably don't eat very well. And I constantly get this. Yeah, and people really believe it. You know, I talked to Jack Parr about this one time. I used to do a lot of the Parr shows. One time, I talked to Jack Parr, and we were sitting in the dressing room. He says, you know, what gets him is that he's constantly getting letters from people who ask him, you know, we would like to have you out for dinner. We're great fans of yours, and my husband, Clarence, who doesn't like you very much. However, you'd like to talk to Clarence because he's really funny, and Clarence has got a lot of great stories. Actually, he's a lot funnier than you are, and I'm sure that you would love to talk to Clarence. He's a real card. And why don't you come out and have lunch with us? In fact, here's the way you get out. You drive out Utopia Parkway, turn left at the Grand National there, go 7 blocks down and ask at the candy store, this Big Fred's candy store, ask him where Al and Louise live. They actually believe that that you're going to come out there, and I would say on an average of probably 7 or 8 of those a month, who people talk about a crusty letter. I got one a couple of weeks ago, In fact, whenever on these letters, of course, there's about 9 people read the letters before you get them here, and I've got, you know, people work for me and so on. And so and whenever a really funny one comes through, I get it, you know, it comes down to me. And so I get this letter, and here's what it says. It says, "Dear Gene, my husband can't stand your program. He just thinks your program is terrible. He can't stand it. But me and my girlfriend Mabel, we play bridge every Wednesday afternoon. We just think you're a scream. Now, I would like to do a little surprise for my husband Al, who cannot stand your program. And here's what I'd like to do. I want to have you over for dinner." And so when Al comes home from work, we'd say, "Surprise! Gene Shepherd is having dinner with us tonight. And then you can convince him why he should listen to you. And probably by the end of the evening, he would probably think you're a great guy and would probably listen to you." Signed, Gertrude. And, oh, by the way, here are the instructions. Please call me at this number, and don't worry. If you want to, you can reverse the charges because it is a toll call to Jersey. And I'm thinking, holy smokes. You know, sometimes I would like to know what would ever actually happen. You know, if because I'm sure all performers get these. They really do. I'm sure that every week Elizabeth Taylor gets an invitation from some dildoc who says, "Dear Elizabeth Taylor, I've always wanted to meet you, and I'm going to be in New York over the weekend. And would you please meet me at the Statler Bar, and we'll have a drink? Because, you know, there's a lot of things we could talk about, because I'm such a fan of yours. And by the way, I once knew a girl in Pitcairn High School who looked like you, and I'm sure you'd like to hear..." And I just wonder about that, you know, what kind of strange attitudes people have about things. Now, I'd just like to wonder what would happen if it actually happened. You know, can you imagine me, you know, I said, "Oh, gee, I'm invited to Clarence and Mabel's house out in the Flibbertigibbet Falls, Pennsylvania. They're inviting me out there. They figure I haven't had a good meal in a long time. And if I'll drive out, you know, and I'll drive all the way out someplace..." Knock on the door. "Oh, I got a. I'm so glad you invited me to have lunch with you." And this is a persistent showbiz phenomenon. Now, oh yes, and then of course there's the other one. There's another type too, which is of course this is another type, which is kind of a sad kind of a letter. You get every performer I know gets this type of letter. The performer who you know, and the person who writes to you, listens to you, or watches you on the air, you see, or watches you on television or movies or whatever. Wait until afterwards. Watches you or listens to you, and of course they're involved in what you're doing. And whatever it is that you're doing, you're involved in it. See, so they may be involved in, say, Paul Newman's new movie. That's why there are fan magazines. You know, they want to know if Paul Newman is really at home. You know, the real Troy Donahue, that stuff constantly. Well, so they're very involved in the person, which is fine. It's understandable. But then they begin to believe that he is too. He's involved in you. This is the next step. So you'll get this letter that says, "Dear Paul Newman, as I told you last month, my sister Lee just called, and you know her knee is bad again. And she said that I should tell you her knee is bad again. And that we were talking the other day to my cousin Charlie. You remember Charlie? I wrote to you about how Charlie took that job in Pittsburgh with the Sherwin-Williams paint people. Well, he, Charlie was mentioning the other day that he's going to get the valves ground on his Oldsmobile. And by the way, don't mention it to him when you see him that I told you, because he's trying to keep it a secret from Emily, his wife." And you get this stuff. It's unbelievable. I have gotten a letter from a person who lives in Michigan, believe it or not. I have received a letter from this person 3, 4, sometimes 5 a day. Come in, great big fat ones with pictures of, this is a picture of me and Fred at the beach. You'll notice that I'm wearing my new bathing suit. that kind of stuff. Thousands and thousands of letters and words. And they really believe you're saying, "Oh, Clarence, yeah, oh, I remember Clarence. Yeah, of course, Clarence is the one that married Evelyn. Yeah, I remember Evelyn. Oh, yeah, you remember the fight at their wedding. Oh, so sad. Yeah, and about the time he got kicked out of... Oh, sure, yeah, I remember. And so they kind of include you in this thing, and they're shocked when you don't remember them. Once in a while, you'll have the misfortune to actually run into one of these people in person at a show. You see, they'll come up, and there'll be a lot of people come up for, you know, they want to talk to you about things, autographs or whatever it might be, see. And I'm not talking about just Shepard. I'm talking about all kinds of people. And by the way, it may surprise you to know that there are other listeners to my show other than you, friend. So, which always surprises people. But you'll get a show. You'll go to some place when you're in person, and somebody will come up and say hello, and you say, "Oh, hello." Well, hello. They'll say, "I'm Clarice." And you say, yes, sir. Well, hello, glad to meet you. My name is Gene Shepard. Is there? He says, what do you mean? I'm Clarice. You say, well, yes. Is there anything I can do for you, Clarice? Do you want the? But I'm Clarice. And you say, do I know you? Of course, I'm Clarice. And then by that time, of course, the guards, wherever you are, beginning to edge forward, see, because they can recognize the cuckoo eye. The cuckoo eye is usually a kind of a watery eye where one eye spins faster than the other in its socket. This is the cuckoo eye. And so they're beginning to edge forward. And then they finally hurry this lady out with her shopping bag that contains bones and feet, you see, sticking out of the bag and all that. They finally hurry her out, see. And then 3 days later, you'll get this angry letter that says, "I always knew you were a phony," to absolutely humiliate me after what we've meant to each other. And, and this happens to every performer I have known. And then of course, one of the other sad elements, too, and I suspect this might be part of the whole showbiz world. This is, again, you know, we're living in an age of such total media. In other words, everybody is steeped in media all day long. I mean, they watch television, they listen to the radio, they read magazines, and showbiz is the name of the game in 1970. It really is. And so they begin to feel that the people who are in showbiz are as hung on showbiz as they are. In other words, they think that the guy who is, let's say, making movies spends all of his afternoons sitting watching Carol Lombard pictures. In short, they begin to confuse the performers with the audience, which is a very common thing. And one of the saddest ones is here's another sad. Women are more inclined to do this than men, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want this to stir up the woman's lib, but after all this time, I know what the male looks like. You know, I've been in this business for some time. And of course, there's a lot of other mythologies that I won't even go into, but this particular one is interesting to me because there are certain women who really are totally devoted to performers. They have no private life, apparently, at all. And what they do have revolves itself around performers. So the only friends they have are people who are in the fan club. Or, you know, and they're all fan clubs of Debbie Reynolds, we'll say, or they're fan clubs of some obscure actor or actress. And they send the mimeograph thing back and forth to each other. There's the weekly Troy Donahue newsletter goes back and forth. And I have a complete set of authentic stills from Troy Donahue's second big hit movie for Republic. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And, of course, they all begin to believe that they really know you and so on. And I've never encouraged the fan club idea personally. I've never been involved in this. But a lot of performers encourage it by having, you know, a whole machine where they send out mimeograph autographs and so forth. I've never really had anything to do with this, but the interesting thing about this type of mentality is that they persist. They believe that the people who are in the business are not professionals at all. They're their friends. They're good friends. And I'm sure that a lot of you don't even recognize the fact that I am in show business. A lot of you, you know, think, it's old Shep, you know. And what's old Shep doing on Dick Cavett's show tonight, you know? What's old Shep doing on the stage? What was old Shep doing last week in that you know, that film? What, you know, somehow it's an involvement that goes beyond the idea of what you're doing, and so you get this letter, this consistent one. This is a persistent letter of the fan type, not a fan letter of yours, but thinking you're a fellow fan, and so you'll get a letter that says, "Dear Gene, don't you just love Zero Mostel? Isn't he just wonderful? I saw him in, and that reminds me of Zazu Pitts. Don't you just love her? And you're going to want to, and you'll go on and on, you see, as if you're sitting there, oh, I just love Zero Mostel, and I love, oh, do I love Rock Hudson? I'll tell you. this is a consistent letter that you get. And the poor people, you have a sense of emptiness in their lives when you read it, of how empty their lives are, that they have to write their own personal thoughts to an abstraction, a voice that comes out of a speaker, or a screen image, you know, something shifty up on the screen that's merely a lot of lights that are coming through a lens, and it's a shadow. And it's a fascinating problem. Now I'm not, on the other hand, people who authentically write you and say, I heard you say so-and-so the other night, and this is what I think about that. That's totally different, completely. So don't misunderstand me. I'm talking about the people who will write to you, and they never refer to anything you've done. They write and say, Dear Gene, don't you just love those old Jimmy Cagney pictures? I just think that, and why don't you come out one day and here, and they'll draw a long diagram on how you can drive out to their, you know, to their place, and we'll sit around and talk about Betty Furness movies. Well, couldn't you imagine that one? And it's just fascinating how this develops in the mail. Then there's another one. Anytime you want to bring it, it's all right. Then there's another one that is another persistent one. This is the guy who is persistently setting you straight. There are at least 50. Oh, I'd say probably. I would have to guess this. I don't want even to go on record with this one because it's very hard to estimate. We're living today in a nation of total second guessers. Everybody believes he knows how to do whatever the other guy's doing better than the other guy could conceivably do it. And if he only had the time, he'd be doing it, of course. We understand that, yeah. I'm sure that every politician who may have taken 20 years to learn the whole, you know, his law degree and his work, he gets letters from, you know, guys in garages saying, stupid, it's obvious what to do about the Peruvian, blah, blah, you know. Why any? And so you're constantly getting letters on how you can, quote, improve your show. Of course, the improvement always revolves around this particular guy's hang-up, whatever it might be. Some guys are guys who live totally in the past. They really believe that my show is about the past. So it's like, cut out all that stuff and talk about when you were a kid. Oh, man. I mean, that's a groovy. Then there are the other letters say, cut out all that stuff and do nothing but play. This is a word to the wise. Do nothing but play or Jews are. Forget all that other stuff. That's a word to the wise. And so this persistent advice from people who can't even spell their own name is part of this whole business, and it's fascinating. And someday somebody's going to publish a book, a real genuine book of showbiz letters that come to people in showbiz. I've often thought of it myself, you know, hate letters, which are not as often as you might think, but it's always the sad living in a misty dream letter.